he said. "What Zelda said about King Strait. You have to be prepared for a hostile welcoming." Anise sighed. "I am prepared for such an eventuality. I can be political." Even the snide way in which she said the word told the true story. "I can try, at least. That might not be good enough. What would you have me do? Allow me to speak to the king first. He knows who I am, that I have been loyal to the North my entire life." Anise didn't point out that most of that service was for her father as hired muscle. "As you wish," she said instead. "Thank you." He bowed and departed. Anise turned toward Terin, whose eyes were still dark, his muscles tensed as if for a fight. "It's me, Terin, the one whose hair you've been holding as she vomits her guts out." He sighed.
"I know. I'm sorry. I'm still getting used to being open about things."
"Yes, things."
"The monster has been quiet," Terin said. "It's angry I didn't require its services during the battle with the Brotherhood."
"About that," Anise said.
"What is it?"
"I have a theory."
"About the monster?"
"Yes. And how to get rid of it, if you wanted to." Terin froze. His eyes seemed to search hers, and though she could usually read his expression, she couldn't now.
"I thought you said it was a part of me. That it didn't bother you."
"It is, and it doesn't. But it bothers you, and that bothers me. I just want you to be happy."
"I am happy," Terin said. "Well, most of the time. You make me happy, but—"
she prodded.
"But I'm still afraid you're in danger whenever you're with me. That I'm too weak to hold the monster back. That one day it'll grow tired of being in the background and try to—"
He left the rest unfinished. Anise hated to see him like this. Terin Shiri was the strongest man she knew, in both body and mind, and yet he thought himself weak. "Pain," she blurted out, feeling slightly ill, and not because of the roiling ocean.
"What?"
"When I was in great pain in the hinterlands, the monster recoiled, faded. Didn't disappear, not entirely, but weakened for sure. The same thing happened to you and Darin, right? When they almost killed you." Terin frowned, staring out at sea, as if searching for the memory.
Yes. I remember when I thought it was almost over. How the monster seemed to slip away. For a few moments, I almost felt myself again. Alone, in a really good way. But it always comes back. When I recover, it always comes back."
"If the pain was intense enough, and lasted long enough—" Bile rose in the back of her throat at the thought of the love of her life enduring any amount of pain, much less the sort she was talking about. But anything was worth his happiness.
"You want to torture me?"
A grim smile ghosted across his lips. She smiled back. "I don't want to. But I will, if it will help you. Or I'll hire someone to do it, perhaps Archer. I heard he's looking for revenge for that stunt you just pulled."
I don't know," Terin said. "I have to think. I thank you for telling me this. I know it was hard for you."
"Not that hard," she said, pressing her lips to his. "Now, hold back my hair while I vomit." As it turned out, the Western captain's estimation was perfect. Midway through the night, the call of "Land!" arose, dragging Anise from her slumber. Terin whispered,
"How do you feel?"
She considered the question. She hadn't thrown up in a few hours, and her stomach felt more even. "Better. I've received a respite. Or perhaps the seas grow calmer as we approach landfall."
"Good news,"
Terin said, already dressing. This time he began pulling his armor over his ship clothes. Anise did the same, hearing similar sounds of awakening from the adjacent cabins. A loud yawn arose somewhere. Archer. There was a knock on their door. One moment. It was more like several minutes, as they lit a lantern and helped each other with their plate. At long last, Anise fastened her Evenstar to her belt and opened the door. Sir Metz stood at attention, looking as refreshed as always, his hair perfectly combed to the side, his own armour oiled and gleaming. A longsword hung at his belt.
"They've spotted land, Your Highness," he said, bowing stiffly.
"Truly? We were not aware." He frowned.
"Then you must sleep soundly, for the man in the crow's nest has been shouting at the top of his—"
He clamped his mouth shut abruptly.
"That was sarcasm, wasn't it?"
Anise nodded with a thin smile.
"Bravo, sir. You are growing more accustomed to wit and levity."
"Mona, I mean Private Cheery, has been helping."
Anise looked back to see Terran's expression, a mixture of death and murder, gleaming in his eyes.
Sir Metz, however, was as oblivious as ever. "Come, I will escort you above."
Once upon a time, Anise might have stubbornly refused his escort, but now she'd grown to enjoy his nightly pampering.
"Lead the way," she said.
Terran fell in behind her, growling in her ear.
"If he mentions my cousin's familiar name once more in my presence, I'm going to smear dirt on every shard of his armour."
Anise snorted. To the peculiar knight, that would be a punishment worse than death. A door opened to her right, and Archer stumbled out, his hair mussed, his eyes bloodshot.
"You look awful," she said,
slipping easily into her sisterly duties, which included pointing out her brother's flaws, which were few.
"I only just fell asleep," he muttered. "More board games?"
His only response was a yawn. He seemed to only just notice Terran towering behind him and flinched, darting ahead to put Anise between them. Terran growled, and Archer slipped past Sir Metz, who glared at him, muttering something about lack of honour and childish behaviour. Anise smiled. All was right in her world, even her own stomach having ceased its war against her. She was ready to see Crimea, to learn where her ancestors came from, and, if necessary, to berate King Strait for ignoring her numerous messages. Sir Jonius appeared just as she had the latter thought, giving her a wry look as if he'd read her mind. She blushed and turned away.
"Be political," she reminded herself.
She'd almost rather face a fresh army of sellswords. Above decks, it was far lighter than she expected. Some in the Four Kingdoms would call it an auspicious night, when the moons finally reached their fullness together, meeting for a single kiss that lasted no more than a moment before they parted once more. Though it was still hours away, the moons lit up the sky and water, painting crossing tracks all the way to a dark shore growing closer and closer. Seamen scurried hither and thither, cinching ropes, managing the sails, preparing the anchors and gangway for landing. The merchant captain, a broad-chested man with a rosy-cheeked face weathered by wind and salt spray, shouted out orders as he clenched the wheel. Anise moved to the forward railing as the ship cut through the waters. Her eyes locked on the shoreline, which was angled with dark rocks. Beyond was a land of cliffs and boulders, stretching as far as the eye could see.
"Where is the harbour?"
she asked, expecting to see long docks jettying out from the land, ships at anchor, heavy laden and prepared to sail come dawn, dock security guards lounging and smoking, telling japes about each other's mothers. Instead, there were only bleak, silent cliffs. The captain overheard her question, craning his head skyward to study the moons and stars. After a few moments, he said,
"The currents and trade winds were strong. I fear we missed our mark by at least a day of sea travel up the coastline."
Anise closed her eyes. It was like receiving a gift, only to have it ripped away and promised for another day.
She wanted it now.
Her stomach wanted it now.
"Can you anchor here?" she asked.
The captain frowned, his hands tightening on the wheel.
"Aye, but—"
"Do you know the terrain? Can we travel overland?"
"Yes, of course, but—"
"How long to reach the first city? How long to reach Moray?"
Moray was the harbour city they'd intended to anchor at, had the seas and wind cooperated.
From there it was a long 10-day march to the Crimean capital, Rockland, even if they managed to procure horses, provisions, and carts. The captain lifted one hand from the wheel to rub his beard.
Overland? 2 days at the most, if you march hard.
2 days on land, or 1 day at sea? An eastward trade 10 to 1 for land travel. We anchor as soon as possible. The captain looked like he was considering brooking an argument, but then sighed, resigned.
As you wish, Your Highness. After you make landfall beneath the cliffs, my crew and I will sail north and meet you at Moray.
Good. Thank you. Are you certain? Sejonius asked. If you wish to make a political appearance first, this is your opportunity, she said. He seemed to consider it for a moment, but then shook his head.
I shall stay with my queen.
She put a hand on his shoulder and squeezed, before turning away to take in the landscape once more. She had the urge to leap off the ship and swim for shore. Terin, who'd remained silent for the entire exchange, said,
At least we'll get to take in the scenery first hand.
And he snorted. As far as she could see, Crimea was a land of rocks and, well, more rocks. Even the cold of winter was preferable. At least snowy hills and valleys were pleasing to the eye. Archer eased over, his arm scooped around the maiden he was so fond of. She giggled slightly.
"Where's Moray?" he asked.
"We missed our mark. We shall travel overland."
"Surely you jest."
The rocky landscape drew ever closer, the shard-like cliffs seeming to raise long shadows across the water like weapons meant to pierce any ships that sailed too near.
"Do I look amused?" "She will stay with the ship. You will march with the rest of us."
The girl humped, and Archer opened his mouth to protest, but the combined look of Terin and Anise stopped him.
"Fine."
He kissed his latest fancy on the lips.
"We shall reunite in Moray."
"I will count the days and the nights."
"You shan't even need to remove your shoes, then," Anise said. 2 days, 1 night. You'll survive."
The girl's mouth opened in a silent expression of shock, but she scurried away.
"Was that really necessary?" Archer said, frowning. "Yes. She is trying my patience. She has a name. Marietta." "Aye. Marietta is trying my patience, as are you. She's a nice girl, and a fantastic kiss—"
Terin fainted at Archer, and he shut up, darting away to speak with the captain and Sejonius. Zelda took the opportunity to steal his position beside Anise.
"No wonder the Crimeans have coveted the Four Kingdoms for so long," she said. "The land looks about as inviting as the backside of a hog."
"Without the promise of bacon,"
Terin agreed.
"Hmm,"
Zelda said. From one of the many pockets sewn into her cloak, she withdrew several strips of salted bacon, crunching down on them hard. Anise's stomach grumbled from hunger, the first time in days. Zelda apparently heard it, because she handed one of her strips to her niece. Anise stared at the meat like it was the greatest gift she'd ever received. Considering Zelda's affinity for stealing the food of others, it was a generous gift indeed. Anise savored every bite while the cliffs drew nearer, until the shadows surrounded the entire ship. The captain barked orders, sailors leapt into action, swinging the sails around, retying knots. A massive iron anchor was hefted over the side and dropped into the water with a resounding splash. The ship eased onward, the chain uncoiling until eventually it went taut and the ship jerked to a stop, swaying slightly.
"You'll have to use the boats," the captain said,
finally turning away from the wheel.
"I'll send 4 of my men along to row them back. We'll see you in a couple of days."
"Thank you," Anise said. "You have served the North well."
He grunted, waving her off.
"I serve at the pleasure of the Queen of the West. But you're welcome. I shall endeavour to return you safely to the Four Kingdoms when your business is concluded."
He attempted a bow, but it looked awkward. Blushing, he strode away, barking more orders. Small boats were prepared, 4 in total, each containing several of the northerners, along with an experienced sailor to navigate the tricky currents. As they sliced through the water, Terin used his large frame to shield Anise from the wind, which had something of a bite to it. Archer sat with one leg up, his finger trailing idly in the current.
Soon the dark cliffs loomed over them, and Denise realized she might have been looking at the black cliffs of Darin, so near was the resemblance. Archer seemed to be thinking the same thing. "We'll be cut to ribbons trying to scale them." The sailor assigned to their vessel drew the oars back and said, "Make your way down the beach until you find a crack in the cliffs. They are narrow, but possible. On occasion the earth shakes in Crimea, and the rocks tear apart. Lucky for you."
"Aye, lucky for us. Frozen hell."
Anise had heard of these earthquakes, but had never experienced one. She'd take a blizzard over the ground moving beneath her feet any day. The waters became rougher as they approached the beach, though Anise thought that was the wrong word for it. More like jagged stone path at the foot of treacherous cliffs. Though that was probably too long to use in normal conversation.
"Beach it is," Anise thought wryly.
Disembarking from the boats essentially involved leaping at one's own peril into swirling chest-high waters as waves tried to smash her onto the blade-like rocks. Zelda, even with only one good arm, seemed as steady as the rocks she clambered over, as did Jonius. Anise and Terran also managed it well enough, while Archer required a firm hand from one of Metz's female soldiers, else he would have been knocked over. Anise grinned at him as her brother clung to the wet rocks. He looked much like a drowned rat, his hair askew, water dripping from his chin.
"Stop that," he said.
She continued grinning, offering him her hand. He took it, and they fought along the rocks until they were out of range of the pounding waves. Archer doubled over, breathing heavily, watching longingly as the skiffs moved back toward the ship.
"Madness," he said. "The good kind," Zelda said enthusiastically, bending over and scooping up a loose stone before one-handing it into the frothing sea.
Sir Christoph Metz was in the process of organizing his soldiers into ranks, but Anise said,
"None of that, Captain. We just walk until we find a way through the cliffs. Then you can resume your orders."
Though he looked uncomfortable with the prospects of such an ill-conceived plan, he nodded, moving forward at a stiff jaunt. Behind him, Private Sheary smiled in appreciation. The next few hours were cold and wet. In some places, the area between the cliff face and the sea became so narrow that they were forced to endure the constant crash of waves, clinging to the rocks like crabs. Zelda was the only one who seemed to be enjoying any of it.
"Perhaps this was a bad idea,"
Anise finally admitted. Archer scowled at her, but said nothing. Terin said,
"You defeated an ice bear, remember?"
The moment of levity raised her spirits long enough for her to continue for another hour, but still she breathed a sigh of relief when Sir Metz called back,
"Here."
The captain hadn't been lying. It was as if a giant pair of hands had descended from the sky, prying the cliffs apart, creating a narrow crack that rose upward on a sharp angle. Where the land had been broken, huge boulders blocked the way forward. And yet it was better than the beach. Anise took the first step up. The sun was peeking over the horizon when they finally reached the top of the cliffs. Twice they'd had to backtrack to take the opposite path around a particularly large boulder that dead-ended at a sheer rock face. Twice they'd had to pound masonry nails into the rocks and string ropes in order to scale to greater heights. They were exhausted, all of them. The view from the top seemed a small reward for their triumph, the grey, rocky landscape stretching out as far as the eye could see in every direction. There were numerous boulder fields separated by long stretches of flatlands. Ashy mountains rose far to the west, the distance feeling like an unfathomable space. Anise searched along the cliffs to the north for any sign of the promised harbour city, but her view was obstructed by even more towering cliffs.
"Sleep first," she said,
practically falling as she sat. No one disagreed, and no one bothered to construct tents, barely having the energy to unfurl bedrolls on the rocky ground. Anyway, the night was clear, the stars bright. With Terran's form warm by her side, she watched as, finally, the moons kissed in a brilliant flash of light before pulling away, fated to miss each other night after night for almost half a year before their next meeting. She drifted away, tired but happy. The rain didn't so much fall as dump, startling Anise awake.
She made a sound of surprise that was echoed by the others around her, who could hardly see through the sheet of water that assaulted them. She fought to her feet, and Taryn attempted to hold his bedroll over their heads, but it only served to divert the downpour into waterfalls that soaked their sides. A gust of wind hit, sending the stream sideways, nearly blasting Anise from her feet.
"What do we do?"
Archer yelled through the gale.
"We cannot travel in the storm,"
Sir Jonius said, water dripping from his brow and chin.
"Too dangerous."
The knight was right. There was nothing to do. Any chance for more rest was lost, and travel was out of the question.
"We wait,"
Anise hollered back. Waiting involved hunkering beneath flaps of tents they were unable to raise due to the strength of the wind. Lightning seared the grey sky around them, coming so close at one point that Anise was certain she would be struck. Thunder crashed with deafening roars. And then it was over, the abruptness of the storm's conclusion as sudden as its arrival. The rains stopped. The winds ceased. The lightning continued, but the flashes were distant, somewhere over the sea. The thunder sounded more like a bit of indigestion than the roaring lion it had been a moment earlier. One by one, they dragged themselves out from under their soaked tents. Though none of them looked it, even Zelda's maniacal grin had been washed away by the storm, her cloth sling saturated and hanging like loose excess skin. Anise said, "Ready? We march as soon as we can pack up our things." The only answer was a chorus of groans, except from Taryn, who mouthed, "Ice bear," to her, and Samet, who was already stowing his gear in his pack and searching for a dry scrap of cloth to wipe the rain from his armour. The clouds parted, and several rays of warm sunlight peeked through. "See," Anise thought, "things are looking better already." The gap closed, and the sunlight vanished. It was the last they would see of it for 3 days. Traversing the Crimean rocklands was akin to seeking a way through a hedge maze. As soon as they would round one large boulder, they would realize the way was blocked by another, or perhaps a wide rent in the ground that seemed to appear out of nowhere. "A land of earthquakes," Anise thought bitterly, as they were forced to backtrack once more. "The captain said 2 days," she said. "But I fear his experience travelling through these lands was limited to what he could see from the sea." Archer said, "Marietta." "What?" "The name of the Western girl who I left back on the ship."
"Oh."
Anise felt somewhat bad for not even bothering to learn the latest girl's name, even though Archer had already told her once. But not that bad.
"What about her? Are you in love?"
Archer scoffed, as if the very idea was out of the question.
"No, but I was happy."
She felt bad. Sometimes she forgot that her brother was as much a victim of circumstance as she was. Plus, he had the added weight of having his crown stripped from his head while he lay unconscious. Anise sighed. "Once I persuade King Strait to resume trade with the North, things will get better. I promise."
Archer said, "Persuade how?"
Anise raised a fist in the air and clenched her teeth. Archer laughed.
"I wouldn't bet against you. And if I need someone to joust them into submission, you'll be the first man I call upon."
Archer stuck his tongue out. Sir Jonius had overheard the exchange and just shook his head, muttering something about politics as he turned away. Sir Metz shouted something from up ahead. He and Private Cheery had volunteered for the role of scouts and had apparently found the next path between the boulder fields. The day passed, and by nightfall their clothes and other belongings were finally dry. This time they didn't make the mistake of sleeping under the stars. They sheltered under a long overhang from one of the massive boulders. Inside their large tent, Anise said to Taryn,
"Kiss me, you big lug."
He did, and then they slept. 40. Crimea, south of Moray. Taryn Sheery. Taryn didn't sleep much that night. In fact, he hadn't slept much since his conversation with Anise about the monster inside him.
"If the pain was intense enough and lasted long enough..."
"You don't want to drive me away,"
the monster purred.
"Not really."
Terran clamped his teeth down, nearly biting his tongue. Anise stirred beside him, but didn't wake.
Go away. No. I think I deserve to be a part of this conversation. I saved your life more times than you can count. I won't go quietly.
Terran already knew that. He knew he could handle the amount of pain that would be necessary if Anise's theory was correct. But was it really what he wanted? Yes, he hated the monster at times, what it did to him, what it made him do. But it was also a part of him, and the only reason he was still drawing breath through his lungs, his heart beating in his chest.
See?
The monster said.
I see nothing. Then you are more like me than you think.
That was a truth he couldn't deny, for somewhere along the way the line between them had blurred. And yet it was still his life, his body.
You come when I tell you to come. You will obey me. Understood? Like a pet dog. Exactly.
The monster laughed. And though Terran tried to get an answer, the monster was already gone. When Anise coaxed Terran awake, he felt like he'd only just fallen asleep.
You sleep like the dead, she said,
tracing the edge of his lips with her finger. He grabbed her finger, kissing it.
That's what happens when you almost die.
She cocked an eyebrow.
Truly?
No.
Fool. Honestly, I don't know how you sleep so soundly. I awoke hours ago with a rock stabbing into my back.
I know. I watched as you squirmed and rolled around, trying to get comfortable. I'm sorry. Try sleeping in your armor next time. It might help.
At least it didn't rain, she said.
True.
When they escaped the bounds of their tent, Sametz already had the makeshift camp organized. A fire was burning and most of the other tents had been taken down and stowed. He gave an order and two of his soldiers started on Anise's tent.
You don't have to do that, sir, Anise said.
It is our duty, he replied.
Grudgingly, Terran had to admit he liked the odd knight, liked his sense of duty and honor, and had even grown to appreciate some of his eccentricities.
If only he and my cousin weren't.
He found his fists clenching and his teeth grinding together.
Still here,
the voice in his head reminded him. He took a deep breath and unclenched his teeth, untightened his fists, took a long swill of water and scarfed down some salt beef. The monster laughed.
Maybe a little pain isn't the worst idea after all,
Terran thought. The monster stopped laughing, retreating into the darkness. Terran grinned.
What are you smiling about?
Anise asked.
No rain again, Terran lied. That's the best we can hope for.
He gazed up at the impenetrable layer of clouds before setting his sights forward. Around midday, although the passing of time was hard to judge without the ability to see the sun, they stopped for lunch. Afterwards, Anise ordered Terran and Sametz to climb a small boulder to get a better lay of the land before they continued their march. They climbed in silence, easily finding hand and footholds on the chiseled surface of the stone. Terran, with his longer arms and legs, reached the top first, glancing back to find Sametz not far behind. Somewhat grudgingly, he reached down and offered a hand, which the knight accepted. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Awkward silence. Something Sametz always seemed all too comfortable with.
Fine, Terran thought. It's probably better this way.
He scanned past the field of boulders to where the land jutted out sharply into the sea. There, poking up from the ground, were stone behemoths.
Not cliffs or mountains or more boulders, Terran thought, in awe. Buildings.
Even from this distance they looked large, which meant that up close they must be taller than the tallest towers in Castle Hill, Sametz said, his eyes narrowing. His lips continued to move soundlessly, as if doing calculations in his head. Twice, maybe thrice as tall.
I was thinking four times,
Terran thought.
Moray,
Terran said instead.
The largest Crimean harbor.
Sametz nodded, starting to turn. Terran stopped him with a hand on his arm.
"I know I only just met her, but Mona is still my cousin. Don't hurt her."
Sametz frowned quizzically.
"Hurt her? Why would I do that?"
"I don't mean physically, sir. Mentally. Emotionally. She cares deeply for you."
"I know. She loves me. She told me."
Terran's heart beat just a little faster.
Frozen hell. It was worse than he thought. "You've only just met her."
Metz nodded seriously, as if he'd been thinking the same thing.
"It isn't logical, I know. She understands me. No one has before. I can't explain it. And I think I'm beginning to understand her, too."
Terran had to admit, he wasn't exactly the shining example of a long courtship. His and Anise's romance had been a whirlwind from the start. Then again, they'd known each other before, when they were children.
"Just be kind to her. That's all I'm asking."
"Of course. Why wouldn't I be?" Terran restrained the urge to throw the literal man from the boulder.
"Do you love her?"
If Sir Metz was surprised by the directness of the question, he didn't show it.
"I used to hate that word. Everyone said it. My mother, my father. They expected me to say it back. When I didn't, they were bothered by it. My father got angry. My mother got sad."
Terran searched the knight's face for some shred of emotion, in a turmoil at the memories, but there was nothing. Then, slowly, something changed.
"Then I met Mona."
The other times Terran had heard Sir Metz refer to his cousin by her familiar name had made him angry. Not this time. This time he heard the richness in the man's tone, in the way just speaking her name aloud lit up his eyes, his face. It reminded him of how he felt when he spoke Anise's name.
"You love her?"
Terran said. Not a question.
"Yes. I always will. She's important to me."
That didn't surprise Terran in the least.
I wish you well. Both of you. Together."
He suspected there was a little too much growl in the final word, but at least he'd gotten it out without choking.
"Thank you." "You're welcome."
They climbed down as the shadows grew longer, and the day bullied its way toward dusk. They were forced to camp once more within the boulder field, but by midday the following day they escaped back onto the stony plains. Moray rose before them, even larger now, a collection of towering grey structures that tapered off as they approached the sea. A single ship was at anchor, looking lonely and forlorn as it rocked on the waves.
"What the?
Frozen hell," Anise said, finishing Terran's thought. Her eyes met his, and he felt his own frown reflected on her face.
"Where are all the ships?"
Archer said. "Trading with our enemies. Or sailing to other lands, perhaps."
"That is very unlikely,"
Samet said.
"Moray is known to have the largest merchant fleet in the world, with more than 2,000 ships using the port on an annual basis. The statistical probability of it being empty at any given time is approaching zero."
Archer said,
"Guess it's our lucky day." "There's no such thing as luck," Samet said, frowning.
Sojonius waved their argument away, stepping forward, glaring at the harbour like it was a bad piece of fruit.
"No," he said, "something is wrong. We would be best served by a wary approach."
Anise's hand gripped Terran's arm and he looked at her. Their eyes met again. He knew she was remembering the same thing he was, the parchment, with its bloodstains and incomplete message. The half-dead bird that delivered it. The implied threat of violence that seemed to waft from the page like a putrid steam.
"What say you?"
he asked her, lending her strength via the steel in his tone.
"You're not going to like what I have to say," she said.
Then she outlined her plan. She was right. Terran didn't like it.
"At least I have my morning star,"
Terran thought as another wave pummeled him in the face. He came up, spluttering, spitting salty water. Then again, the weight of the weapon wasn't helping.
"You all right?"
Anise asked, bobbing up beside him. Unlike him, she seemed perfectly at home in the water. Compared to their experiences on the deck of the ship, it seemed the roles had been reversed.
"I'd be happier in my armor," he said,
waving his arms and kicking his legs wildly to stay afloat.
"So you could become a human anchor and sink to the bottom?"
The Queen's arms and legs seemed to barely move at all, and yet she floated.
"How does she do that?" "I meant in my armor and on dry land."
Archer had been even less happy with the plan.
"I finally dried off after the storm,"
he'd complained before they'd left. Metz and his soldiers, of course, were too honor-bound and loyal to the Queen to utter a word of complaint. Sojourners, too. Zelda had merely said,
"Watch out for the sea monsters."
They trooped back to the cliff's edge, searching for another break in the barrier until they'd found one. A hard few hours of climbing and scraping against rocks, and they'd reached the water's edge, stowing their rations and armor above the tide line, behind a jumble of medium-sized stones. Now, Anise said, "Duck!" And Terran was a hair too slow as another wave bashed into his face. After much floundering and his version of swimming, Terran was past the breakers and into open waters, where who knew what was lurking beneath the dark surface.
"Monsters,"
his own monster said.
"Hilarious," Terran said aloud.
"What?"
Anise asked, coming up for a breath.
"Nothing. Come on, we're falling behind."
Sir Metz and his soldiers had already closed the distance to the ship by half, as had Jonius, and Zelda wasn't far behind them, barely affected by her injured arm. Even Archer, despite all his grumbling, was making good progress. Anise, Terran knew, was holding back to wait for him. For the next hour, Terran ducked under again and again, trying to push the water aside while kicking his legs. Half the time he felt like he'd moved backwards when he finally came up for air. Still, he made steady, if slow, progress toward the ship. When he finally got there, Archer was annoyed at having been made to wait on his sister's orders.
"We board together," she'd said before they waded into the water. "Took you long enough," he said,
clutching at a rope ladder used in the event a sailor fell overboard.
"Had to drag all this muscle through the water, and these fists are like anchors."
Archer offered a wry smile, but clammed up.
"I'll go first," Terran said, reaching for the ladder.
"No," Anise said. "Sir Metz, then Private Cheery, and—"
The list went on. Terran was last, behind even Anise.
"You're the anchor,"
she said when she reached his name. He glared, but didn't argue. Above them, the others were already climbing. Impatiently, Terran waited his turn, following close at Anise's heels, the rope ladder sagging under his waterlogged weight. He heard feet hitting the decks, but couldn't see what was happening. There were several shouts, and then a harsh silence. Anise clambered over the railing, and then he did the same. He froze when he hit the deck, which was slick with water dripped by the others. He shed his own waterskin, pooling at his feet, mixing with the blood that was already there. The decks were splattered with it, as were the masts and water barrels. A sword lay discarded nearby. There, a knife, a sailor's cap stained red, a boot on its side. Other random items were strewn about. It was obvious what had transpired. An attack.
But where are the bodies?
That's when he noticed the gangway linking the ship to the long pier extending into the water. It was painted with blood. The smears continued onto the wooden pier, a trail leading all the way to the quay and then up the road toward the city. Toward Moray.
"Frozen gods of the north," Archer said. "Why did they take the bodies?"
41. Crimea, Moray Harbour. Anise Garrick. While Sir Metz and his soldiers kept watch, Anise, Terran, Sojourners, Zelda, and Archer searched the ship for survivors. The carnage continued below decks. Shattered chairs, a door hanging halfway off its hinges, blood-spattered walls, floors, and even ceilings. There were several slashes in the wood, as well as a wall with a splintery hole bashed through it. The pit in Anise's stomach seemed to grow bigger with each room they searched. Finally, they reached the captain's office.
"None of the gold is missing,"
Sejonia said, gesturing at the lockbox, which was untouched.
"So, not pirates,"
Anise said. Her throat felt tight.
"I brought them here. Me. These deaths are on my head. What frozen hell have I led my friends to?"
"Not pirates," Archer agreed. They stood there, staring at the walls, as if afraid to see the horror in each other's eyes. No one offered an alternative to pirates. After a few moments of silence, Anise was about to suggest they head back up when a sound arose. To Anise, it sounded almost animal, like a whimper. Terran's Morning Star was already in his hand, although it would be useless in such confined quarters. Archer's sword shot up, and he looked ready to stab anything that moved. Zelda's hand tightened into a fist, her head swiveling to locate the source of the sound. Anise pressed a finger to her lips and gestured to a closet, which was open the barest crack. Terran tried to step toward it, but she blocked him, offering a shake of her head. She motioned with her fingers.
"One, two, three."
She flung the door wide open and danced back three steps, ready for a fight.
"Icy gods of the north,"
Archer said, moving forward immediately. The Western girl shrank back from him, her entire body trembling as he held her as she cried.
"She has her name,"
Archer had said before.
"Marietta. What happened to you, Marietta?"
The girl had finally stopped shaking enough to be helped to her feet and brought above decks. Her eyes darted about, taking in the wreckage and blood. Fresh tears spilled from her eyes, dripping from her chin. Archer had his arm around her. Her legs seemed to lose strength, and he helped her to one of the few seats, a crate turned upside down, not covered in blood.
"What happened here?"
Anise asked.
"Who did this? How did you survive?"
The girl only sobbed.
"Frozen hell, Anise,"
Archer said.
"Give her a moment to breathe." I'm sorry."
Anise kneeled, oblivious to the blood that soaked through her breeches. Slowly she reached out and touched her knee. Marietta flinched.
"You are safe," Anise said. "We won't let anyone hurt you."
Her eyes red and swollen, she looked at Anise.
They came from nowhere. One minute we were talking, laughing, and then they were all around us, and everyone was dying. There was so much blood, and I didn't know what to do, so I ran. I fell down the steps, hurt my knee, but I made it to the office, and I hid while everyone else screamed, and—"
A ragged breath took her by surprise, shuddering through her. Anise rubbed her knee, waiting for her to regain her breath.
"Who came? Who attacked you?"
Marietta shook her head.
"I don't know how to describe them. They were like monsters. They killed them. They killed them all."
Anise couldn't help but shudder at the word. She had all too much experience with monsters. A lifetime's worth. A shout from one of Semetz's soldiers dragged her gaze away from Marietta. She was at the ship's railing an instant later, having barely remembered standing and moving. Beside her, Zelda said,
"They're coming back!"
and began peeling off her wet sling, testing her arm. That's when Anise finally got a real look at the city of Moray, which cast a long shadow over the harbour. The buildings were no more than crumbling ruins, as if hundreds, no, thousands, of hammers had been taken to them. There were no signs of humans, none of the fuss and bluster Anise had expected from the largest trade port in the world. Humans, no. Monsters? Yes. They crept from the shadows of the buildings, their forms thick and white against the grey stone. Rags hung about their forms. Some walked hunched over, their hands nearly dragging on the ground, while others stood more erect, larger. They all had strange humped ridges on their backs. Their heads were hairless, bones protruding in half a dozen places like stunted horns. They all flashed sharp teeth, a guttural, blood-curdling cry emanating from the backs of their throats. There were dozens, no, hundreds, no end to their number as they poured into the open.
"Raise anchor!"
Bernice shouted to no one in particular, though there were no sailors left to obey her order. Thankfully, she had Terin, who was an entire crew himself. He grabbed the crank and roared, drawing it back with two hands. It moved slowly at first, the chain locking tight, and then, almost grudgingly, spooling back onto the wheel, turning faster with each revolution.
"Hurry!"
Anise thought, pulling her Evenstar from her belt. The creatures seemed to pick up speed as they drew closer. Some of them sniffed the air as they ran, extending their arms and using their hands to run faster, almost like galloping horses. And always that ear-wrenching sound. The anchor burst from the sea, spraying water as it rose quickly toward the railing.
"Sails!"
Anise cried. But Metz already had his soldiers untying the booms and sails, the canvas instantly catching the wind and snapping like the crack of a whip. But it was a large ship. Acceleration was slow and methodical. Still, the vessel inched away from the pier, the gangway, which had been forgotten in their haste, tumbling into the ocean.
"Come on, come on, come on,"
Anise thought, watching the creatures draw closer, spilling onto the pier, knocking each other aside in their haste to reach the ship. Two fell into the water with large splashes, but none stopped to help them. She could see their eyes now, dark orbs that seemed devoid of emotion, focused on one thing and one thing alone, their prey. The gap between the ship and the pier had widened to almost a body length. Anise willed the vessel to pull away faster. Terin had a different plan, hauling barrels and crates over to the railing. Zelda and some of the women soldiers fell in to help him. Terin, his teeth gritted, grunted as he hefted one onto his chest. The first of the creatures reached the end of the pier, not stopping at the edge like Anise had hoped, but springing into empty air, its fingers, which were clawed, she could now see, reaching for the ropes dangling over the sides. Terin roared as he threw the barrel. It hit the monster in the chest, stopping it dead in its flight. It squealed as it fell into the water. More reached the end of the pier and jumped. Barrels and crate and other objects were flung over the railing, and Anise pitched in to help, adrenaline lending her added strength. Many creatures were knocked into the water, but there were simply too many. The first few latched onto ropes or gaps in the boat's prow, their claws digging deep. They tried to dislodge them with barrels, but most missed or shattered across the creatures' backs. "They are exceptionally strong," Anise thought, trying to analyze them without emotion. "If they make it on deck..." Someone screamed, and Anise turned to find Marietta with her mouth open as Archer stood before her. One of the creatures had somehow managed to scale around the side of the boat and then clamber over the railing. It snarled, its fangs flashing, glistening white. It held a curved knife carved from bone in each hand. They were stained with blood. It attacked with the speed of a striking cobra, springing off its hind legs. Archer swung his sword with the well-practiced precision of a prince, but this monster didn't know nor care about the rules of swordplay, catching the sword on the thick flesh of its forearm, dark blood spurting from the gash that appeared in its too white skin. It swung its bone blades one after another. The first caught Archer in the chest, the second in the throat. Anise couldn't breathe as he slumped to the deck, the creature standing over him. Marietta was scrabbling back on all fours, her mouth open in a soundless scream. Anise's heart didn't seem to beat any more. She felt nothing, her entire body numb, as she stalked across the deck. There were tears in her eyes, but they might have been rainwater for all she recognized them, blinking them away. Without commanding her arms, her hands, her Evenstar orbited her head, cutting the air to ribbons. Slowly, the creature turned, drawing its bloody knives with it.
"Anise,"
Terin growled, but his words were distant thunder, a world away. The creature moved like lightning, ducking under her weapon's path and slamming into her, its bone-horned head thumping into her gut. She gasped as it stabbed with knives, snapped with fangs, and landed atop her. She managed to grab the thing's wrists, holding them back, the edges of its knives scraping the air just before her face. She could see the saliva glistening on its teeth, smell the coppery taste of blood on its tongue. Though it was huge, larger than many of the others, she felt, more than saw, something feminine about it. This was an alpha female. "Just like me." In its scarred, distorted face, she could see Archer's death replayed again and again and... "Rah!" she shouted, pushing back and bringing her knees up, shoving the creature hard to the side. It rolled off her, and she released it, flinging her body in the opposite direction, clambering to her feet and grabbing her evenstar from where it had clattered to the deck. Across from her, the creature also regained its feet, staring at her with a hatred matched only by her own. Anise took a step forward, and it shrieked. She could see Terin watching, stopped halfway to saving her.
"This queen doesn't need saving."
She took another step forward and swung with everything she had. She noticed only the slightest widening of the creature's eyes in recognition of the impending blow. Its head exploded as the spikes tore through it, sending flesh and blood spatter and brain matter flying in all directions. Its body seemed to hang in midair for a moment before crashing down. Anise felt nothing at its death, like stepping on an ant. She dropped to her knees, taking in Archer's still, silent form. His eyes were open, staring at the nothing sky. His hand was gripping the sword, as if ready for the next meaningless blow. His lips were parted slightly, and Anise almost expected him to utter a quick-witted jape about death and life, something with a shred of sexual innuendo. He said nothing. He didn't blink. His chest didn't rise nor fall.
"It's not supposed to be this way,"
Anise thought. Where were the last words? The chance to say goodbye, the opportunity to apologize for everything, to seek the forgiveness of one of the few people she wanted it from. But she knew. Real life wasn't like the stories. Death was sudden and final. Shouts snapped her from her reverie. She stood, turned, and crossed the deck, dragging her gore-drenched Evenstar with her. Terin looked back and met her eyes, and she could feel the "I'm sorry" in his stare. There wasn't time for that, else they might all end up the same as her brother. She reached his side, locked her aim on one of the creatures still trying to climb aboard, and swung her weapon. One by one, they knocked the enemy from their flanks. Three more managed to haul themselves over the railing. Terin killed one, but suffered an injury to his abdomen. Samet killed another, but not before it had ended the lives of two of his soldiers. Sejonius killed the third, his expression grim as it died. Finally, after what felt like an eternity, the ship moved out of leaping distance from the pier. Anise expected the rest of the monsters to stop, to watch them go with angry snarls, but no, they continued to jump, falling short of the ship and splashing into the water.
"Let them drown."
For some reason, Anise thought they would sink. But no. Their arms moved well in the water, almost gracefully, and the boat hadn't gained enough momentum to outdistance them. Soon they were climbing onto the wooden deck once more. They fought on, as the sun sank beneath the ruins of the city, as the thick clouds seemed to press down on their shoulders, as monster after monster hauled itself up the ropes as fast as they could cut them. Six more breached the decks. Two killed each other as they fought over Marietta, who held a knife with trembling fingers. Terin, despite his prior injury, slayed another. Metz and his soldiers defeated one, losing one more from their ranks. Anise, Zelda, and Jonas teamed up to kill another, though Anise suffered two long slashes, one from the creature's bone knife on her thigh, and the other a rake of claws across her chest. They stung like hell, but at least she was alive.
Unlike Archer.
There was only one left, though hundreds more were still in the water, swimming after the ship. Thankfully, the wind had finally done its job, the ship outrunning its pursuers as it found an easterly current. The last creature showed no signs of retreat, gnashing its teeth and slashing its bone knives through the air as Terin herded it toward a corner, his morning star arcing above him. Anise wanted nothing more than for this creature to die, to watch its blood spill out, its lungs stop filling with air. She took a deep breath and got control of her emotions.
"Wait,"
she said, hating the word, the mercy it implied. Terin half turned toward her, keeping one eye on his foe.
"Capture it, if you can. I want to talk to it."
Terin raised his eyebrows in a "you must be mad" manner, but nodded. Sir Metz joined in, flanking it with a large net held by him and Private Sheary, who, much to Anise's relief, was among the survivors. They were the decoy, the creature retreating further until his back pressed against a wall. The real net dropped from above, thrown by Zelda and Jonius, who'd snuck up the stairs to the higher deck. The creature's guttural cry roared forth as it fought its bonds, but where Anise had previously heard animal fury and meaningless garble, she heard again what she'd heard several times during the battle. Words. The language was rough-sounding, but there was no doubt the creatures had been communicating with each other in their own way. She watched as it tried to stab Terin through the netting, but he dodged the blow and jammed the butt of his weapon into its head. The blow should have knocked it unconscious. Any human would have been out like a snuffed candle flame. But it merely shook it off and tried to claw through the ropes. Three more heavy blows and its eyes finally rolled back, its body seeming to fold in on itself. Anise stepped forward. Terin turned and said,
"We will secure it. You see to your brother."
A spike of pain in her chest.
"No, I will help with the creature. Sir Metz, Zelda, Sir Jonius."
Three people she trusted as much as anyone in her entire world.
"Please, tend to Archer. Use all the salt we have left to preserve his body. If you don't have enough, get it from the sea. My brother shall be buried in Castle Hill. He deserves to go home."
She swallowed down bile, trying to fill the hole in her heart. Anise set her mind and body to the work, ignoring Terin's concerned looks. First, they carried the unconscious creature up the steps to the main mast, manhandling it into a sitting position. Though heavy, all bones and muscle, it was smaller than the one Anise had killed, the one that had killed. Anise gritted her teeth, shoving more than pushing away the images.
"A male,"
she thought, relying on intuition. Next, they secured the male's arms and legs to the mast, using thick ropes. Each taking a hand and foot, they used knives to saw off its claws, so it wouldn't be able to cut through its bonds when it awoke. Lastly, they borrowed leather belts from several of their dead soldiers to clamp the creature's head to the mast, tightening them around its broad forehead. Finished, Anise studied the creature more closely. Its eyes were wide apart, leaving a grizzled white forehead and the bridge of its flat nose between them. Its ears were large and quite curved, occasionally twitching while it slept. No hair grew on its face, nor its head. In fact, Anise couldn't see the evidence of any hair on its body at all. The ridged humps on its back were hidden behind it right now, but Anise could still remember how hard they felt as she carried it. Terin said, "Anise." He tried to wrap an arm around her. She shrugged him off.
"Not now, Terin.
It's secure. We are safe now. This can wait."
"No, it can't. Fetch me a bucket of water."
"Anise, now!"
Terin didn't look angry at being commanded like one of her common subjects. Only sad, which, for some reason she couldn't quite explain, made her blood boil. This time, however, he didn't object. She stared at the creature, half expecting its eyes to flash open, half wanting them to. She could picture herself digging them out of their sockets with a knife. The image did nothing to comfort her. She took a deep breath, fighting back tears. Terin returned with the bucket.
"Dump it on its head."
"Anise,
do it!"
He did, the water cascading off the creature's bald, ridged scalp. It snorted, stirred, but didn't awaken.
"Get another."
Terin knew better than to argue this time. It took six buckets of water before the creature finally awoke, its eyelids rising slowly, lazily. Anise's hand instinctively went to a knife sheathed in her belt. The creature's dark eyes darted to her hand, then back to her face. She could see the intelligence behind them. Perhaps the creature was more animal than human, but it was no fool. It recognized the danger it was in.
"That is good. I can use that."
"Do you speak the common tongue?" she asked. It growled, revealing its pointed teeth, straining against the leather straps. It tried to curl its fingers over to test the ropes, releasing a shriek when it realized its claws were gone. Anise stepped forward, grabbed it by the chin, squeezed. brought her other hand up, clutching the knife, the tip of breath from its eye.
"Do you speak the common tongue? Answer me!"
Terin knew better than to intervene, though he hovered close by. The creature's pink tongue flashed out, as if tasting the air. Its nose twitched, sniffed.
"Human, sweet, but..."